Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denson. It's another beautiful day in Madeira Beach, although we did get some hard rain last night. Today, though, you'd never know it. Dry as the desert out there. And I know a little bit about the desert since I used to live in Las Vegas. A couple things before we get started into the show. Just a couple things that I've seen. I guess we're going to have to talk about two deaths in this program today. But I'll start with this one. I saw that Chris Cornell, lead singer from Soundgarden and a couple other bands, died. It's looking right now like it was a suicide. Just have to see. He was 52 years old. And I wouldn't say I'm a huge Soundgarden fan as a band, but they had some good songs. You know, I'm 46 years old, and I can distinctly remember to this day the transition that music went through between the 80s into the 90s, between what you would, I guess you'd call generally the hair bands, the Poisons and Whitesnakes and Def Leppards and Cinderellas and all of those groups. And then the transformation into what was the 90s with Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains, Nirvana, and all of them. You know, I was in that prime age of my early 20s when that was all going on, and I still remember the first time I heard or saw, it was probably on MTV, the song Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. As soon as I heard it, I knew things were changing. And I was never as big a grunge fan as I was a hair band fan until this. And as you know, once in a while when my musical tastes pop up, I tell you how I listen to Iron Maiden all the time, although they were not a hair band. Although they did have some of the characteristics of them. My musical taste is firmly attached to the 80s and not the 90s, even though I did listen to all of those groups as well. You couldn't help but they were everywhere. And then, of course, that kind of music kind of went out of style as well, as all music and everything does. Even rap and hip-hop, it goes through changes as well. So that's what I think of when I think about Chris Cornell dying. In fact, I think one of his best songs was the one that he did for Casino Royale, the James Bond movie, You Know My Name. I think that's a great tune. And it's one of the best songs that Chris Cornell, I think, was involved in. I can remember Black Hole Sun and Rusty Gate and, you know, all of those songs. And I can remember way back when seeing the first Soundgarden music video on MTV. As I remember it had a bunch of police cars, like it was old film from like the 70s or something, like it's some demolition derby or something. For some reason that pops into my head. There was some music video, I think, that with an early Soundgarden video that was the video. So that's what I think of, and just seeing those changes. And what I also noticed is that, you know, most of those hair band guys from the, let's just say, late 70s into early 90s, they're mostly still alive. Yes, some have died, diseases, and maybe a couple suicides, but all of the prominent men, I guess you'd say, from that era are still alive. Axl Rose, still alive. David Coverdale, still alive. Bon Jovi, still alive. Joe Elliott from Def Leppard, still alive, although their guitarist died of an overdose, I believe, or alcohol poisoning. But all of those guys, even all the guys from Motley Crue, still alive, no matter how crazy they've been. But, you know, now that Chris Cornell's dead, Layne Staley from Alice in Chains is dead, Scott Weiland from Stone Temple Pilots he's dead. Kurt Cobain from Nirvana, he's been dead for a while. I don't know if that's a surprise, given the kind of music. You know, hair band music was fun. It was about partying. It was about chicks and all of those things. And when grunge came in, it was the exact opposite. It was about depression and sadness and loss and all of that stuff and being shunned and being beat up. And it takes a particular type of person to do that kind of music all the time. And I'm just wondering. And then I think also with grunge, in with it came, I think, heroin addiction that Layne Staley had, Scott Weiland had. It brought in a different kind of addiction. You think about the 80s, yes, cocaine and probably alcohol were involved in a lot of those bands. Get into the 90s, you start talking about meth, you start talking about heroin. You know, even the lead singer of Sublime, with their music, I guess, was kind of upbeat. He died of a heroin overdose. So it just didn't bring in new music. It brought in a different type, and not just a different appearance, but a different kind of culture that I think in the long term has not been good for a lot of those musicians from that era, where once again, Nikki Sixx, Vince Neil, all those guys, all, you know, Ozzy Osbourne, still around. Yeah, that's just what I think of. And one more thing, they had this poll out, best hamburgers in the United States from a chain, I guess, best hamburger chain. And Five Guys won. And second place was In-N-Out. Being that I've lived on both the East Coast and the West Coast, I've gotten to experience both. I cannot agree that Five Guys is number one. There are a couple Five Guys restaurants near me, and I haven't been to one in a long time. I don't do fast food generally. But In-N-Out is better. If you've never been to the West Coast and never had In-N-Out, I'm telling you, In-N-Out is better than Five Guys. You're just going to have to believe me. You ever go to Las Vegas or L.A. where In-N-Out is, just get what you're going to get, a hamburger, and get it animal style. You'll completely understand what I mean. So let's get to the program. Roger Ailes, I told you we were going to talk about two deaths. We talked about Chris Cornell. Roger Ailes died, I'm guessing last night. 77 years old. And he has been in the news a lot the last year and a half for various reasons, mostly bad reasons. And I can't help but look back at him and see a very tragic figure. I know that what he did for conservative media in the last 20 years is considerable. Considerable. As much as anybody out there, as much as Rush Limbaugh, who of course existed before Fox News, as much as National Review, Roger Ailes did as much as any of them to bring a different point of view to the American people about what is actually going on in the world. And he should be commended for that. I think it's also obvious, though, that behind the scenes, and I don't know how long this had been going on, do I think that Roger Ailes was sexually harassing women at Fox News since day one? I'm inclined not to believe so, simply because I haven't heard any stories about that. But at some time between then and now, something changed. So the culture there changed. I guess he changed. And it seems that some other people, men at Fox News, wanted to go along with him in this descent into this madness that he got into, seeming that so many women who worked at Fox News were sexually harassed. As I've told you before, I'm inclined to believe at least a couple of them are lying, just because, and I wouldn't know which ones are telling the truth or lying, but I'm going to guess a couple of them are in it for the money. But there are so many women that I have to say that I believe at least some of them, over 50% of them. And even over 50%, is too many. One is too many. And I think this was more than just kidding around. You know, I come from the entertainment world, and I can tell you there's a lot of sexual harassment. I guess that's what you'd call it in that business. I worked with a bunch of people who was not unusual for us almost on a daily basis to be talking about. We had a lot of time on our hands sometimes. To talk about sex and about former boyfriends and girlfriends and comment on how each other looks every day. Very, very common. And I'm friends with all of those people to this day. But I think that's a little bit different atmosphere. So I know maybe what would, you know, and I don't think that was going on at Fox News. And frankly, it shouldn't be. It's a different type of situation than what I was working in. You know, when you're wearing suits and ties to work and you are going to be talking about serious topics in the world, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan, terrorism, the economy, the election and everything, there's just a certain different way that you have to carry yourself and behave, both in front of the camera and off camera. That's my attitude. Whereas if you're doing something else in your life that isn't as serious as that, I'm going to give some people some leeway. That's just, maybe it's just me. But Roger Ailes, at some point, that kind of, you know, behavior leaked into his business and what he was running. That wasn't his business. It was Rupert Murdoch's business, but he was responsible for that part of it. What he was responsible for, and it seems that he was the leader. So all these years, the everybody's watching Fox News and they think they're doing all, you know, a great job behind the scenes. It was a little bit of a cesspool, it sounds to me. It grew to be that. Where people wanted out, people left, charges filed. And Roger Ailes eventually had to be let go from that position. And from there, in my opinion, he went from the frying pan into the fryer, going from Fox News into the Trump campaign. I don't know what happened to him. And if you look into his history, I mean, he goes way back to Richard Nixon. Roger Ailes worked on the Mike Douglas show, and that's how he met Richard Nixon, and that's how he got involved in politics. He ended up working on Ronald Reagan's re-election campaign, being responsible for TV. Of course, there was no internet at the time, but TV and radio stuff. During Reagan's re-election in 1984, and then Bush 41's election in 1988. And then later, he was tapped to run Fox News when Rupert Murdoch decided that he wanted to start that. But unfortunately, if you don't, you know, Roger Ailes lived long enough, and this is why I think he's a tragic figure, to see all of the work that he did kind of start coming apart. If you don't know, Fox News' ratings are now being passed up by CNN and MSNBC. There was a time when Fox News was double, triple in those certain hours in the evening what those channels were. Not anymore. And outside of Roger Ailes, I think that that's what, you know, we're going to start to see, being that it seems that our country is so fractured, where you have a group of people over here getting their news and information from these certain places, and then these people getting it from totally opposite places, and never the two should meet. You don't have people these days who watch both Fox News and CNN, or both watch MSNBC and Fox News, or Fox News and NPR. You just don't have that. You don't have people who read, who go to the National Review site, but then also go to the Daily Cause site. That just doesn't happen anymore. And I know that there are very divergent points of view of what's going on. And it would be hard for somebody to go to both and agree with both. But I know for me as a conservative, as hard a conservative as you, you know, as conservative a person as I am, I do go to CNBC and MSNBC, and you've heard me talk about going to the Daily Cause and reading what they're saying over there. I don't necessarily have to believe it. But it does pay to keep an eye on what everybody else is doing. We don't believe in that anymore. There is a lack of curiosity on both sides. But I think also what is happening is that as long as Democrats are in power, that Republicans are going to try to get their information. We got to get anything that contradicts what Barack Obama says. We have to. So Fox News' ratings are way up. As soon as Donald Trump becomes president, it flips around. Now everybody's desperate. Liberals are desperate. We got to find out any information that shows how bad Donald Trump is. So we got to start listening to CNN. That's what it's become. Whereas now the Fox people, it seems, you know, conservatives or Republicans have kind of backed off saying, hey, we won. Big deal. And that could be a new phenomenon in our culture, in the political culture of our country. I don't think it's good, but I think that there's reasons to believe that. And so Fox News, or Roger Ailes, has lived long enough to see that. That he created a program eventually that is only cool at certain times, is only popular at certain times. It doesn't seem to have that. And Fox News isn't going away. It's still making plenty of money. But if he wanted to run that, and that was my understanding, to, you know, grind those other stations into the ground, it's obvious that he didn't do that. He didn't. And it turns out that possibly, at least a little bit, Fox News is a little bit of a fad. Once again, a fad that isn't totally going away. It's not going away like the hula hoop. But it's just something else. Think of something that was very, very popular and then kind of just remains well-known but isn't as popular as it used to be. I think that that's what Fox News is. And then once a Democrat becomes president or Democrats get hold of the House and the Senate, then I'm sure Fox News' ratings will go back up. So, but Roger Ailes died on a day where I just saw these stats just a couple days ago, that the station that he ran for all those years that was so far ahead isn't there anymore. And we know Fox News has had its, of course, with the sexual harassment issues, Bill O'Reilly leaving, Megyn Kelly leaving, they are working through some programming issues that may be a little bit reflective of the ratings. I don't know. I mean, I read that, when Megyn Kelly left and Tucker Carlson took her place, they were all blaming, see, Megyn Kelly, she wasn't needed. Look, she's left to Tucker Carlson and the ratings didn't change. Obviously, they did. They have less viewers. Obviously. I mean, even Rachel Maddow's show is popular now. Donald Trump has been big business for CNN and MSNBC, and I'm going to guess for all of those liberal websites out there, I'm sure their hits are up as well. Donald Trump is big business for liberals, just like Barack Obama was big business for conservatives. And you hate thinking about it that way, but that's the way it is. Roger Ailes, tragic figure. I'm going to guess that he died. I mean, he's 77 years old. I have parents. I have a father who's 80. I have a mother who's 76. And, you know, you think about that stuff all the time. Those things can happen. And my mother, my mother had a very tough 2016. Very, very difficult. But 2017, I mean, she's doing great. She's climbing steps, you know. She and my dad have planned a trip. And my dad's 80 years old, but still, I mean, he has like 20/20 vision now that he got this cataract surgery. He gets around fine. He goes out every day, and his mind seems to be fine to me. But anything can happen at any time, and I'm going to guess that Roger Ailes, maybe it probably was a heart attack or some type of stroke, something like that. And, and that's sad, but, I mean, nobody gets out of here alive anyway. But he had a chance at one time to be a complete media icon forever, no matter when he died. But his own proclivities and his interest in blonde women and saying things to them, hey, he's not the first guy who has been brought down by women. And these women had very good, I think, reasons to bring these charges against him. So he's a tragic figure. I don't know what happened with him. I don't know if he was like that his whole life, and maybe he got to be like 70 years old, and he's married and has a child. I don't know. I don't understand it. I have a hard time understanding. I'm a straight guy. I love a beautiful woman as much as any other straight guy, but I don't get that stuff. There's these things that some men do that, you know, aren't necessarily violent or anything, but they're lewd. And I just don't get it. I mean, some of my women friends who have known me for a long time, yes, we can go back and forth at each other pretty, I'll just leave it at that. But in a work atmosphere, you know, men that do this, you know, they're good guys at home and coaching their son's little league team and all that, but then they go to work and all they do is say these things to women. I don't get that at all as a guy. I have no idea what goes on there. That part of my mind just doesn't exist. It just doesn't. So I'm not saying I'm perfect. But I'd like to think that if I became as well-known and as powerful and as rich as Roger Ailes, I would know to keep my mouth shut. I would hope. And you know, I'm single, I don't have any kids or anything, but I think that if I was interested in getting into a relationship, it would be with somebody outside of the work that I'm doing, and my singleness would not lead me to harass women. That's just not part of me. I would hope that I would know what I was doing, you know, even if it popped into my mind, I said, no, Ed, you can't do that. That's wrong. Just keep your mouth shut. Just go to work. Do your job. Have a good time. Kick butt. Go home. Roger Ailes, that obviously was not good enough for him. And then on top of that, he goes and joins Donald Trump's campaign. You know, Donald Trump's campaign and him being president are probably the worst Republican candidate in American history. Probably. I don't know. Tragic figure. Roger Ailes is not going to be remembered probably the way that his fans would want him to be remembered. Even among conservatives, I think there's going to be always be a taintedness to him. Let's go to something else. A while ago, I talked about Alex Jones. He was in, got divorced, and he's fighting for custody of his kids. And I wanted to do a little bit of an update on it simply because I enjoy it so much. First of all, he did lose custody of his children. His ex-wife has, I guess you'd call, control of the children, and she gets to determine what the custody arrangements and everything are going to be. So a couple months ago when I was talking about how he was in court, and remember I was talking about, you know, his lawyer saying, well, his show is just entertainment. He's just a showman. He really doesn't believe. Because his wife's saying, he's this crazy guy. Look at him. Look what he says and everything. And then they're saying, no, that's just a show. I happen to believe that Alex Jones is a complete show. I think he's a complete liar. I don't think that he means anything that he says. I think he does it for clicks and subscribers and viewers and listeners and being outrageous and everything else. That's what I've always believed since day one. I think InfoWars is a total scam. Total scam. But there is now a follow-up story. There's that. He lost that, and he's lost control of custody of his children. Second of all, he has had to come out and issue an apology about a company in Twin Falls, Chobani. Is that how it says? Chobani. It is a yogurt company. Alex Jones, at some point, made the comment that Chobani was bringing in migrant rapists into this country, and these migrants were going around Twin Falls, Idaho, raping children, and there was a story about how this child was attacked by the kids of a migrant or something like that, that Alex Jones make a big deal about. First of all, the attack happened, but it wasn't by the children of migrants. Furthermore, Chobani chose to fight Alex Jones on this, dirtying their name, and then the people of Twin Falls and the government of Twin Falls, Idaho, have, and I'm going to guess, even though Idaho is a conservative state, I'm guessing that Twin Falls probably isn't, but the Twin Falls government decided that they were going to go up against Alex Jones for saying these things at all, as well. And it turns out that Alex Jones has now come out and said he was wrong to say those things and they were inaccurate. He's taking back everything he said about that, even though at the time it got a lot of attention and everybody believed him. When are people going to realize that you can only slander and lie about people for so long? And you keep doing it and you keep being outrageous. At some point, somebody is going to take this personally. Especially if it's easy to prove that what the Alex Jones or whoever else is saying this, that they're lies. What these people are saying are lies. If it can so easily be shown to be true, somebody at some point is going to step up and say, oh, really, he said that about me? How about we go to court and we talk about this? And that's what's happened to Alex Jones. I don't know why anybody listens to him. I know, he just knows these things, and he's thinking 10 steps ahead. Well, if he's thinking 10 steps ahead, how couldn't he win this custody battle against his ex-wife? If he's seeing 10 steps ahead, I guess his wife sees 20 steps ahead. These are bad people. I keep telling you, you cannot buy into bad people no matter what they say, even if you agree with it. Whether it's Donald Trump or Mike Flynn or Alex Jones or Roger Ailes or anybody else, these people have shown to be underhanded stooges. They eventually end up being bad people. You cannot believe them. You cannot follow them. Just can't. You know, doesn't mean you have to say bad things about them. Doesn't mean you have to go after them or everything. You just can't follow them. Don't listen to them. Don't watch them. Don't do anything. They're bad people. You know, I run into this with my other program, Unfound. We talk about people who are suspects in these disappearances. We do. And there's a lot of evidence to show that these probably, it's just not enough evidence to get these people into court. Well, that's the last place these people want to go. So it's a little bit of a different situation. Whereas, you know, Alex Jones is just an outright liar. It would be like me doing my other show and just calling out people with no proof whatsoever that they had something to do with the disappearance of somebody. That's something I don't do. This is what Alex Jones and these other types are doing. It's wrong. And I hope that other people and companies come out and sue him as well. If that's the way it's going to take for him to learn what he's doing is wrong, then that's what it's going to take. You know, Chobani, yes, they have brought migrants into this country. And they're all working at this plan, a $450 million plant that Chobani set up. The guy who started Chobani was, I guess, an immigrant. Seems like a good guy. I don't care if he's conservative or not. He's starting a business. He's employing people. He's paying them like $15 an hour. They have no, education or anything like that. Fine by me. Fine by me. But we've gone so crazy about immigration and migrants. I realize that there is a Syrian migrant problem. I realize that terrorists can get into this country for this reason, for that reason. I also remind you that a lot of these most recent attacks were by people who were legally here, who were American citizens, most importantly. So maybe we have to fix our own business first. If this guy, for you didn't write the guy's name down, if he wants to start this yogurt business and employ people and make yogurt that people love, and he wants to employ people in Twin Falls, Ohio, and Twin Falls, Idaho. I think there's a Twin Falls, Ohio, too. fine by me. And if there has been, you know, anybody can prove to be that there's been an uptick in crime or rapes or murders in Twins Falls, I'll be happy to take a look at any information anybody can show me. You know, as long as it's not from the InfoWars website. You know, what is Twin Falls saying about all of this? What are they saying? What are the other residents of Twin Falls saying? I just want to know. Alex Jones, proven to be wrong again. Not surprised. Got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital. Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Let's move on from Alex Jones. Donald Trump gave the commencement address at the Coast Guard Academy. And the feeling that I get from it, it was certainly a self-pity fest. He, in a commencement speech, now keep in mind that Mike Pence, has he spoken at Grove City College, my alma mater, yet? I don't know. I'm sure that Mike Pence's commencement speech at Grove City College is not going to be about how Donald Trump has been treated so unfairly. He's going to have probably a rousing, uplifting message about life, about values, about faith. I'm sure that's going to be Mike Pence's speech. Mike Tomlin, coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, he gave the commencement speech. I forget where. I can tell you that I'm sure in nowhere in Mike Tomlin's speech did he talk about how he, you know, I know he made a joke about something about the Patriots somewhere, but it was not a self-pity speech. But Donald Trump talked about being no politician has been treated more unfairly. And I guess he tried to spin this around as, you know, how he's going to overcome this and everything. And this should be a lesson to you. And from the video I saw, unfortunately, too many of those Coast Guard graduates seemed to enjoy it, and I'm guessing their parents were there. They were enjoying it as well. Disgusting. And the funny thing is, I have a good friend of mine that I worked with at Star Trek. Her son went to the Coast Guard Academy, or is going there. I don't know if he graduated this year. Maybe he's already graduated, but so I'm decently familiar with somebody who went there. And I worked with her, very fine woman. I'm sure her son is a good guy. But it's disgusting to me that people would actually respond in a positive way to this. You know, he's talking about no politician has been treated more unfairly than he has. Now, see, let's see. During George W. Bush's administration, there were books written about his people wanting to assassinate him. Remember that? And do we so quickly forget all of those people who, I mean, many today, still to this day, believe that George W. Bush was behind 9/11. That not that he just covered everything up, but he was responsible for it. That he and his people cooked it up. Remember that? Oh, that's right. Donald Trump was the one who actually blamed 9/11 on George W. Bush as well. Or so how quickly we forget. Now, 9/11, there were how many people killed in the United States on, you know, under and over 3,000, but I think under 4,000 people. And George W. Bush, people wanted to blame that all on him as some sort of conspiracy. I think that was kind of unfair. And now Donald Trump wants to say that he's the guy who's been most treated unfairly. Donald Trump, what about your comments about George W. Bush? You don't think that was unfair? I mean, over 3,000 people, Americans died, mostly Americans. And you think that what you did was fair? All those people you got in league with to go after him and just maybe just so you could win an election, You think that's fair, and now you think you're treating unfairly just because of what the media is saying about you. And really, a bunch of this is just self-inflicted by you alone. He, like Barack Obama, cannot think of any topic outside of how it affects him. Anything that happens is a direct reflection on him. He thinks he needs to defend himself. He can't think of any topic without talking about himself. How about all those people who went after Barack Obama saying that he wasn't an American citizen? Oh, that's right, Donald Trump. You were involved in that as well. How about that? You don't think that was a bit unfair? And, you know, later, you know, now saying that, oh, yeah, he's an American citizen. And you did it just to get attention. You don't think that was unfair? It was surely more unfair going after Barack Obama's birth certificate than what the media all over the map, both conservative and liberal, are saying about you. What you did regards to Barack Obama and George W. Bush is surely more unfair, surely. And you think you're treating the most unfair in history? How about going back to the Ronald Reagan years? I was just talking about this yesterday. Ronald Reagan had no conservative media to speak of. There were people who were conservative out there, but they were holed up, you know, getting their public magazines in the mail back in those days of National Review, Human Events, the Weekly Standard. There was nowhere that they could go on TV, and it wasn't radio. Talk radio didn't start till the late 80s, for the most part. They had nowhere to go. So the media could have a field day. ABC, NBC, CBS, Sam Donaldson, David Brinkley, Peter Jennings, they could tee off on Ronald Reagan. At least you have some defenders, Donald Trump, and you think that you're the most treated, you've been the politician who's been most treated unfairly in American history. It's disgusting. I just, totally predictable. I keep saying this, totally predictable. And what's even more disgusting, that people, you know, this wasn't some average university he was speaking at. He was speaking at the Coast Guard Academy. And people are applauding him and clapping for that. Horrible. I guess he also tweeted out this morning, and this goes right along with this, that this is all a witch hunt. This, you know, if you haven't heard, a special prosecutor is being hired. Robert Mueller, a former FBI director that I had forgotten about, not as prominent in my mind as Louis Freeh or Janet Reno, but yes, he was one of them. He is going to be the special prosecutor, is going to look into the Russians and what went on with the election and any connections between them and the Trump administration. And Trump has come out and say this is nothing but a giant witch hunt. You mean like all you going after Barack Obama's birth certificate? You mean that witch hunt, that kind of witch hunt? Do you mean you heading up and, you know, giving support to all of those people who had been discredited so many times, but giving them hope in one comment about how George W. Bush caused 9/11? That kind of witch hunt? How do you go even further? How about all of those people that claim the Clintons had all those people on that list murdered? You mean that kind of witch hunt? You know, you think that you're being undermined. I mean, nobody's claimed that you've murdered anybody yet. So how bad can it be? You elected this guy. You elected him. I know some of you didn't who are listening to this, but many of you did. You elected this. And don't tell me you couldn't foresee this. He is going to take down the Republican Party. He is going to damage the conservative name, and it's all because you were afraid of Hillary Clinton. Because that's what that binary choice that you tried to get me to buy into was all about, trying to make me afraid. And I'm sorry you just couldn't do it. I'm not afraid of her. I'm not afraid of liberals. I think that we can beat them, but we surely cannot beat them with Donald Trump as president. In fact, it would be easier to beat them if Hillary could become president. But I couldn't vote for her because that would be against my morals. That's what I tried. I tried to talk about this, and you just saw it some other way. We the United States, Barack Obama, what did he say last week? People get the leaders they deserve. He's right. I don't necessarily mean it in the same way that he does. But the general statement, if you define every word, is correct. Although his context is different than mine. Some people elected a kook as president, and that kook is Donald Trump. He's a kook. Complete kook. Complete showman. If he'd have been born 200 years ago, let's say, he would have been in some wagon going around the western United States selling snake oil. A little, little sign on the side, drink this, cure all your ailments. It'll stop smallpox. It'll stop, whatever ailments were ailing people in the 1850s, let's say. That's who Donald Trump is. And you people who are otherwise good people, you bought into all of this. Disgusting. The country is not going to get any better with him. It's just not. You thought it would be. I was convinced that it wouldn't. It wouldn't happen, and I think more and more I'm being proven right. He has a Congress who is afraid to send him anything that he is going to veto, because they're afraid he's going to go out on Twitter and make fun of them. So they write bills to please him. He's not conservative. They know he's not conservative, so there's no reason for them to write conservative bills. That's why you got the AHCA the way it is in the House. Because I think as much as some of these guys might have campaigned for Donald Trump, but they only did it for themselves and women too, I think underneath they know that Donald Trump is a kook. I think so. I do not, and in fact, I hope more and more there is a divisiveness between the Congress and Donald Trump. So, they can keep this guy under control, but you can't control his Twitter account. You can't control his mouth. And it's his mouth so far that is getting him in trouble between saying whatever he said to James Comey, talking to the Russians about secret information that wasn't even collected by the United States, making these comments, a witch hunt, no politician has been treated more unfairly. It's a reality show, but that shouldn't be a surprise. Let's move on to something else. I want to crank out a couple more things before I leave you today. Currently, and I only know about this, I think, because the guy who is heading this up plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Francisco Cervelli is the catcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And he's been there a couple years now. He just got a nice contract before the season started. He is both Venezuelan and Italian. When you hear him talk, he sounds Italian, but actually he's both. And which parent is which, I don't know. And in fact, when they had the World Baseball Classic, I think he played for Italy. So he is now being what's going on in Venezuela. And, I guess the joke is out there now is if you want to lose a couple pounds, just move to Venezuela. Since there's no food there, just move there. In a couple months, you're going to be back down to the weight that you want to be, and you can go back to your country where you're a citizen. But he is doing these videos now, and he's getting together with other Venezuelan baseball players to do these videos and raising awareness about what's going on there. I generally have nothing wrong with that. These are mostly men who have, if it's baseball players, I guess they're all men, but these are people who have left that country, had special talents. Baseball teams in the United States noticed that, brought these guys to the United States. They're playing, they're making tons of money. I couldn't be more pleased for them. And I can respect what they're doing with these videos. The issue, and this pops up anytime that something like this goes on, is even though these videos are being made and Francisco Cervelli is putting all these people together, I'm not sure they completely understand why this happened in the first place. Where were these guys? Francisco Cervelli has been out of Venezuela for years now. I mean, he was in the Yankees organization before he joined the Pirates for many, many years. I mean, he's not a youngster or anything. He's in his early 30s, which is kind of old in base in professional athlete terms, especially in baseball. And, you know, so he was like a member of the New York Yankees when Hugo Chavez headed up Venezuela. Where was Francisco Cervelli then? Was he okay with it, even though they had a dictator's president? Hey, at least the people were getting fed. Is that good enough for all of you now? Where was he? I don't remember him doing or hearing about him or any other Venezuelan baseball player raising awareness about how horrible Hugo Chavez is. So do these guys who are putting these videos together, do they fully appreciate why what has happened in their country has happened? You know, this goes anywhere, like, nothing more pathetic than people who leave, a war-ravaged country or, you know, a country that has had a famine, like Ethiopia or wherever else. They move somewhere else. They want aid to be sent to that country, but they don't want the attitude toward economics and politics changed. They want to still believe in their tribalism. They want to still believe in their socialism. They want to still believe that it is the obligation of the rich to be taxed to the point where they have to give their money to the poor. And they don't see that it is those reasons that are causing people to eventually starve. And people to want they left the country for those reasons, but they have no idea why those problems started in the first place. And for those types of people, I don't know how much pity I'm supposed to have for them. I don't know how much sympathy I'm supposed to have for them. You know, it's like you could get the idea that with this Maduro, whatever his name is, the leader, as long as the people are getting fed and their bread on the shelves, they don't care that a dictator is running the country. And that isn't something, you know, where is the talk about free market economics? Where is their talk about a representative government? Where is their talk about real elections? Where is there a talk about, you know, all of these things? They just don't, you know, all they see is people starving and they don't understand why. And for all of these countries, not just Venezuela, but for any country that has suffered like it is right now, it's all the same. Whether it's North Korea or Somalia or many of those African countries, unfortunately. Or some of the older, you know, but going back, I guess, to the 70s in Southeast Asia with Cambodia, Laos, all the murder and everything that goes on there. It is a factor of dictatorship and too many people in those areas believing in socialism. It is not a factor of those people believing in capitalism and free markets and elections or anything else. And that's what should be the point. Unfortunately, I think for too many of these Venezuelan baseball players is that You know, I think actually to too many people, not just Venezuelan baseball players, they don't understand how wealth is created the right way. They don't understand how it's supposed to work, that everybody is supposed to be rich. Everybody is supposed to be able to buy food and have clean water and all of these things. Because as soon as you start talking to them about free markets and capitalism, even though they're living here in the United States, they see it. They're making tons of money. Start talking to them about that, and then they start thinking, "Well, the rich are taking too much, and we got to." That's just going to put you back to what you're seeing in Venezuela now. You know, this reminds me of Ayn Rand, something she wrote about the Vietnam War. And, you know, the part that she found most outrageous, and I remember one of the articles, I forget which book it's in. It's obviously one of her nonfiction works. She's writing about it, and what she found most bizarre about what the United States was doing in Southeast Asia, in South Vietnam, in the 60s, you know, I'm not sure when she wrote it, but, you know, we were there from the early 60s to the early 70s, is that here we were. We were going to go over there. We were going to get all these men killed and everything else. And then we were going to allegedly free this country. And then we were going to allow them to set up any sort of government that they wanted, even if it meant being a socialist dictatorship. I still remember. I think it was something like that she wrote. And she's right. She's right. What are we doing? If that is our plan, to free these people, to then allow themselves to vote themselves back into bondage, I think that's the word I want to use, into socialism and poverty, I don't know what the hell we're doing over there. It's the same way with Iraq. It was the same thing there. That too many, I think, Iraqis wanted us to just go in there and clean out Saddam Hussein, and then they just wanted to kind of run the country themselves. And that's why we had to stay there. And of course, we left due to Barack Obama, and we've seen what has happened. So the way Ayn Rand thinks about, you know, the thought about the Vietnam War is the same way that I think about these guys who are trying to raise awareness for Venezuela. They want food and aid and everything to happen in Venezuela, but then they want to go right back to what they were doing. Once everybody gets fed, they want to just go right back. No. It's just kind of bizarre, and it just shows you there are too many billions. I mean, how many people are on the earth? 7 billion. I'm going to guess at least 6.9 billion people in this world have no idea what it takes to be free and what it takes for bread to appear on a shelf somewhere. And they don't know how wealth is created and what keeps people free and how things work. You know, and it's like us 100 million spread throughout the world working against the other 6.9 billion. That's right. 6.9 billion plus 100 million adds up to 7 billion. Yes. It's us 100 million working, and it sounds like a big number until you hear the number 6.9 billion. So that's what we're up against. And what you see in Venezuela, even the people who still live there and are, you know, are starving and hear all the, you know, killing flamingos to eat. I mean, you can find the stories. They think that they would just be fine if they could just bring back Hugo Chavez. That's how bizarre, how warped these people are and how they don't understand what is going on. They think it's a factor of this new dictator that took over since Hugo Chavez died. It's not. It's a factor of their system as a whole. It's the leadership doesn't need to change. Everything needs to change. And I'm sure they can't wrap their minds around that. But I got to go. EdwardDensel.com is the website. You can find this program at Podomatic and iTunes. Find it on RedStateTalkRadio.com. USAPodcast.com as well. On Twitter, USA Podcast. My other show, A Missing Persons Program, Unfound, still working on tomorrow's show. It's a little bit of a mystery of what it's going to be right at this second. You can find it on Podomatic and iTunes. Please subscribe if you could, maybe even give it a nice review. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.